Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 12th day of November, Anno Domini 2022, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. But first, yes, yes, Steve Ray. Those of you who are on YouTube can see that Steve is still in his fallout shelter somewhere deep beneath the Superstition Mountains. But the rest of us are here in the studio. Dennis Worster came formal today.
That's right.
He's
spared no expense. I mean, spared all expense.
Spared all expense. Don't parody.
I knew you'd get that. I knew you'd get that.
We're here for all of this. We should probably at some point talk about Twitter and Trans America. Is that what it's called?
That doesn't sound right.
One of the places that does your
TransUnion. That's the one.
Yeah. All right. But we're starting with Apple.
Yep.
Because we discovered today
it
or
starts
this
with a.
week. For all of Apple's talk about how private your iPhone is, the company vacuums up a lot of data about you. iPhones do have a privacy setting that is supposed to turn off that tracking. According to a new report by independent researchers, though, Apple collects extremely detailed information on you with its own apps, even when you turn off tracking, an apparent direct contradiction of Apple's own description of how privacy protection works. The iPhone analytics setting makes an explicit promise. Turn it off, and Apple says it will disable the sharing of device analytics altogether. However, two app developers and some security researchers at the software company MISC, M-Y-S-K, took a look at the data collected by a number of iPhone apps, the App Store, Apple Music, Apple TV, books, and stocks. They found the analytics control and other privacy settings had no obvious effect on Apple's data collection. The tracking remained the same whether iPhone analytics was switched on or off. The level of detail is shocking for a company like Apple, MISC said. The App Store appeared to harvest information about every single thing you did in real time, including what you tapped on, which apps you searched for, what ads you saw, how long you took at a given looked at a given app, how you found it. The app sent details about you and your device as well, including ID numbers, what kind of phone you're using, your screen resolution, your keyboard language, how you're connected to the internet, notably the kind of information commonly used for device fingerprinting. Opting out or switching the personalization options off did not reduce the amount of detailed analytics that the app was sending, MISC said. We switched all the possible options off, namely personalized ads, personalized recommendations, and sharing usage data and analytics. Apple did not respond to multiple requests for comment. What happens on your iPhone stays on your iPhone unless you count the mountains of information your iPhone sends to Apple. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple is tracking you even when privacy is on. And your choices are, I suspect it as much. I'm burning my iPhone immediately. Well, what did you expect? Meh. Apple what now? And, of course, other. So far, we have 23 votes. Well, what did you expect is in the lead, as I think it should be.
Yeah, really.
But I know many of you will have more to say about this. So if you head on over to our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, if Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion, currently at least. The number one item under poll discussion is 12 November 22. Apple is tracking you even when privacy is on. And of course, about that or about dang near anything, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
You know, I picked up my iPhone while you were reading that. I'm like, okay, well, how big a deal is this? So I went into settings and then general, and then I searched for the word analytics, and I found the analytics and improvements area, and it looks like this.
It does look like that.
And then it has this line here where you can see where it says analytics data. And at least they show you all the different logs, and if you tap on them,
nice.
You can see all the data, and it even lets you export them so you can... You can see what's being sent about you, which I think is...
Well, that's nice.
I guess polite of them to do.
Depends on how you look at it.
Right.
You apparently can't stop it, but at least you can see it.
Well, it does have a lot of... And it's hard to pick up here on the screen, but it does have a lot of green switches that you can turn off. And then I said, all right, well, hang on. What is this about analytics and privacy that they have here? And they have a whole big, long, scrolly letter that describes, here's what we're going to collect, and here's what we're going to do. And if you turn it on, here's what we're going to do. And it also says you may also choose to disable the sharing of device analytics altogether. To do so, go to Settings, Privacy and Security, Analytics and Improvements, and turn off the Share iPhone Analytics. If you have an Apple Watch paired with your phone, then tap to turn off Share iPhone and Watch Analytics. By using these features, you agree and consent to Apple's and its subsidiaries and agents' transmission, collection, maintenance, processing, and the use of this information described above. And they say, yeah, but we're going to do it all in accordance with our privacy policy. So I guess I get to read a little bit more legalese to determine specifically what that means. But
right. But according to this company, MISC, and the guy who runs it, his name is also MISC, if you're going to have a company, name it after yourself.
That's right.
According to them, it does turn it off for other apps.
Right.
It does not turn it off for Apple apps.
Right. And I wonder if there's also – sometimes when I read these stories, they're a little bit sensationalized.
Right.
Nothing against you.
No, I get it.
But you're reporting what somebody else claims to have found. And I wonder if – I know that there's a checkbox for also share the app analytics with the developers of certain apps.
Well, yes.
Like let me know when things are crashing so that the developer can fix it. But I wonder how detailed this report is. I think I need to go back to the original source and read the report
before I
get super excited about this.
And yes, I agree with you. The problem is when you look at something that says turn off all analytics,
right,
and it doesn't.
Yes. Well, yes, all with an asterisk, right?
Right. For certain select values of all.
That's it's like the unlimited data plans, you know.
Right.
or up to 3 times faster, you know.
Right. The weasel words up to always amaze me.
All the lawyers that get to massage the language.
Yep. And that's the thing that people are annoyed by. It's either full disclosure or it's not.
Right.
And you can't say it is when it isn't.
Right.
That's the thing.
Yep. When they see all... They want to know what would the reasonable person.
Right.
Yep.
And we know what that does.
The first become the first three letters of it.
Yeah.
But that's just, it's not, you know, nobody's going to give up their phone. And I'm not saying Google doesn't do the same thing. God knows they do. But you need to be aware. Just be an informed consumer. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you just need to know. That no, your data are not private, no matter whose phone you're using or what settings you put up. There are some data that are going to go out whether you like it or not. And you don't get a choice in that.
Well, you see that, did you see that new ad where they use the guy goes into a person comes into the UPS store and they're attaching a message to a carrier pigeon?
Oh, yeah.
And they go, well, it's no worse off than you using it on the phone. It's not encrypted.
Right. Yeah. So what Dennis was alluding to with his parody thing there is, as you may know, Elon Musk bought Twitter and immediately shot it in the back of the head. He's done some...
All right. So at first he says, oh, I'm going to buy Twitter. And they says, well, I don't think I'm going to. Probably all of your subscribers are all bots anyway, at least most of them. And then he comes back and he says, well, actually, I'm going to do it because I think there were some financial ramifications if he didn't. So he probably borrows a whole bunch of money and pays, what was it, 40-something?
$47 billion.
For this. And
he had to cash out a lot of money out of Tesla.
So then...
Or $8 billion of Tesla stock, yeah.
So he comes in and he says, if you want to have a blue check mark. So blue check mark generally means that you're a verified account, that you have some notoriety or celebrity, and they verified that, no, this is the actual account. And they do that to help curb against people impersonating
fake
others.
Accounts.
So he came in and said, well, here's the thing. We can't rely on advertiser revenue forever. What we'd really like to do is be able to sell this idea of putting that verified account, and you can have it. And at first he was saying, oh, it'll be $20 a month. And then he kind of backpedaled and said, well, how about $8 a month? So what happened is people were buying the checkmark and making accounts that were spelled very similarly to common brands.
Or just had the name.
Or just had the display name.
Right.
Right. And then they'd take the logo of the company and make that their avatar. Right. And then they'd
Or celebrities.
And start writing things that the legitimate entity would never write.
Right.
So, you know, they'd go in and
the big example is Eli Lilly.
Yes, I was. Thank you.
Yep. Eli Lilly is the company that makes is a pharmaceutical company, makes a whole lot of things. One of the things they make is insulin. A fake account bought the blue check mark.
Right.
Called itself Eli Lilly and Company.
Put the Eli Lilly logo in as their avatar. So it looks pretty legit.
Looks pretty legit and posted one tweet. Starting tomorrow, insulin will be free. Eli Lilly's stock tanked. Tanked.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a disaster. There's got to be 10 million Elon Musk accounts now that bought the blue check mark and are posting all kinds of stuff.
So he goes and says, you know, from now on, if you're going to be a parody account, he's not saying you can't be a parody account. You need to have it in your Twitter bio, which is the description. And then later on, he revised this and said, no, you need to have it in your display name and in your Twitter bio. Right. Otherwise, we're just going to cancel your account. We're going to give you your $8 back and no dice for you. So. So, you know, I threw the parody in there just so that everybody knows that I'm not nearly Dennis. I'm just impersonating Dennis as a parody.
Impersonating Dennis. Because we know Dennis would never dress this formally.
Anyone who knows me.
Yeah, so that's that. And if you have, I've actually.
He's bleeding a lot of money, though.
He's bleeding a ridiculous amount. He's now trying to, I don't know if he's going to sell it, shut it down, just. Again, shoot it behind the ear.
Well, he's got so many advertisers now running scared.
Who've left.
Yeah, they're gone. Right. I mean, they're not coming back. They're not going to sit there and go to his whim the way he's handled taking a professional person like him. And the way that he's taken it over and is handling it is so unprofessional.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
And a lot of people have jumped ship and have moved over to either Mastodon or Counter.social. I personally like Counter.social better.
We should talk about that.
Yeah, we will. But let's go to the phones first. Our first caller is Bart from Rochester, New York. What's up, Bart?
Hi, Nick. This is Art, A-R-T, from Rochester.
Oh, Art.
And Art. He said Bart.
No, he didn't.
Sorry about that.
No worries.
On the topic of Apple tracking, I know I've called in on this before, but I'll be a broken record and I'll say we can't fight back. There's a thing called Pi-hole. I did a Google search for their tracking that you're talking about, and I found one site related to the stock tracking, and Pi-hole out of the box blocks that. So we can fight back.
We can if you turn off cellular, because Pi-hole only works over the internet.
Not exactly. If you create a VPN, you can tunnel in and get your DNS records from your Pi-hole.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know how well it blocks things through.
You'd have to send all your traffic through the VPN back to your house, I presume.
Actually, you don't have to send all of your traffic. You just have to specify port 53 to get the DNS.
Okay.
Well, that doesn't... Okay, but that's...
I mean, he's technically right.
It's technically... No, because that hides where you are. It doesn't stop the Apple apps.
But if I could interject, Nick, what I'm telling the VPN to do is use the DNS server of Pi-hole when I'm VPNing in.
Okay.
So I'm not getting anybody else's DNS settings.
Yeah. I understand that, but your DNS only determines where you're coming from, which VPN in this particular case is still your house.
So the VPN is determining that.
Right.
DNS.
But that doesn't stop the data going over that connection.
Well, I think what he's saying is when your phone or something else tries to phone home with all the analytics, and if Pi-hole is set to take blah, 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 dot apple.com, it can take that request and return back nothing. And then the traffic.
Right, but then you can't use that app.
No, this is for the analytics part. Not the apps themselves.
It depends on how well you can figure out what
slice and dice that.
Right. No, I agree with you. Pi-hole is an amazing product. I don't. If you're out in the real world and you're using cellular, Pi-hole is not going to help you at all.
Sorry, Nick, I still have to disagree with you on that. I actually have it working.
And you've turned. Okay, if you turn off Wi-Fi on your phone and use only cellular.
Right. Then you set up a VPN connection to go back to presumably your house.
Right.
So that all your traffic back through your house, and your house has Pi-hole in the inside of your house.
Right. But if you're still using those apps and they're still working, data are going through your Pi-hole back to Apple. Right.
They can only if the DNS lookups provide a successful
result. But if you allow that, so that, for example, you can use Apple Music on your phone.
You'd have to slice and dice which records you're allowing to get successful data. And so for presumably example, the analytics.apple.com, you block that.
Right. Yes, exactly. So Pi-hole out of the box is blocking stocks-analytics-events.apple.com and a bunch of other domains. So the actual information that you want to get back about your stocks and those numbers, that's not being blocked. The analytics is, because the DNS is being blocked.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Very good.
Great. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Art.
All right, that makes sense. And for those of you who will set up a Pi-hole, and for those of you, understand about Pi-hole, it's not blocking your location, because that's still coming from your house. You would have to use an external,
some other VPN.
VPN somewhere, right, to block your location. But as far as all the data that come from that location, you can block that.
Couldn't they have come up with a better name?
No, it's a great name. Pi-hole.
It
runs
right
on
in
a Raspberry Pi. It's a VPN running on a Raspberry Pi. And it's a black hole for data if you set it up right. So it's a Pi-hole. I like it.
Oh.
All right, that makes sense. Mm. If indeed the data are going to like analytics.apple.com,
right,
and not directly to apple.com, you can block it.
And presumably they are going to a host name and they are not going to a specific IP.
Right.
In the 10 dot or whatever it is.
Right. Right. So, yes, if in fact that's how it works, then yes, you can absolutely block it.
Yeah. And that's what Art was talking about.
Right. So, yeah, that makes sense. Pi-hole is an amazing little product. It runs on a Raspberry Pi.
Now, isn't there some new revision to that project with a different name? I thought I saw that go by on YouTube this week. I'll have to look for that during the break.
Pi-hole Fork Rodeo Domino is one.
It was something like network security or something like that. I'll check for it.
Yeah. Interesting. So, yeah, that's Pi-hole, and that's how that works. So, anyway, we were talking about Counterdock Social and Mastodon.
Yeah.
They're the two big replacements, in huge quotes, for Twitter. And both of them are neither of them is new. But both of them have newly arisen in the conscious of America.
Yeah. Gathering notoriety.
Right.
And they sort of remind me of the ancient, like, NiserNet point-to-point messaging protocol.
Right, right. And both of them can look on your desktop very much like TweetDeck. Mm. I'm a big fan of TweetDeck.
Yes.
You should explain those for folks that don't.
If you're not a fan of TweetDeck, you can change. Well, anyway, the point here is you have various streams of information. There is the, as Counter Social calls it, the community fire hose.
Okay.
Which is just everybody's stuff.
All right. That's what I'm used to.
And that's what's there. But you can also set up a second one that is, why am I like pretending filter, I know right? what I'm talking about when I can just run it? Okay. I'm loading it up now. There we are. Ooh, I have to log in. Look at me.
Can we show your screen?
Maybe, but that's not important.
Okay.
Depending on... Yikes! Ad blocker detected.
You can't win.
You can't win for losing. So I've got... I do not want you showing me notifications. Thank you very much. So you've got your community fire hose, and then my next column is my friends.
Okay.
So those are the people whom I have befriended, and I see their stuff scrolling down that column.
All right.
And then the next column over is notifications.
Okay.
So I can have, for example, if somebody likes a comment of mine, I see that there.
Right, if they interact with you.
Right, if they mention my name or they send something directly to me.
Right.
I see that there.
Okay.
And there are others you can have, direct messages and all, you know, kinds of other columns. That's Counter Social, and Mastodon is very, very much the same thing.
Okay.
You can set it up either with one big, the community fire hose type thing, the normal thing that everybody sees,
right.
Or you can add those columns and do much the same thing that TweetDeck or Counter Social does.
So I learned that I actually created a Mastodon account last April.
Congratulations.
And I learned that because I tried to log in and didn't remember my password. So I reset the password, and I think the first thing I realized is I want to bring over all of my friends and everybody else and find out who already has a Mastodon account and just relink up with those people.
Right.
And that turned out to be more challenging than I was expecting.
Yeah, so. I bet it would. Here he is. I see Dennis Worcester.
Hello. Is it me or is it the parody?
Seems to be the real you because he's not wearing formal attire.
That sounds about right.
All right. There he is. And I've now followed you. Look at me.
So on Twitter, I have hearted or favorited a couple I'm not gonna of different deal with that articles.
Right now. Yeah,
I need to go back and reread about how to integrate some of my Twitter followers to bring them, or I'm sorry, the people I follow
right.
on Twitter.
There are programs that will do that.
Okay.
I haven't paid much attention to them because there's a whole lot of people that I follow over on Twitter that aren't here yet. So
that's the other problem.
Right.
Is that I've gone into my Twitter bio and I said, hey, by the way, if you're on that other app, you know, the elephant one.
Right.
Then you can find me over there at this name.
Right. So, yeah, there's a whole bunch of. So I've got it set up much the same way. Local timeline, home notifications. And so the two of them look almost identical. And I get a little confused.
So with Mastodon, there are different servers, and then the local rules or whatever the house rules for that server can be different than others?
Yes, yes. And so there are multiple – we'll talk about that when we come back, but there are multiple servers on Mastodon but not on Counter Social. So Counter Social is a little easier to deal with. Yeah, we'll talk about that when we get back. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, Steve Ray somewhere in the Superstition Mountains, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we go any farther, isn't it further, Father? Steve on YouTube
There he is.
Said, can also use OpenDNS or NextDNS to block DNS entries for tracking and such. That's true. Also, he also said, and this is quite true, the analytics may not use DNS.
Yeah.
They may have the IP address of Apple servers hard-coded in.
They may.
And so in that case, there is no way you're going to stop them.
Yeah, I need to reread this MIST guy and see what
his
details are.
Exactly.
It's all in the details when it comes to the internet.
All about the details. So, that's where that stands. And, okay, so let's talk about Mastodon and Counter Social. Mastodon has multiple servers out on the internet. And as Dennis said, it's like the old...
it's like the old BBS days or the old internet days for internet service providers, CompuServe, AOL, and all those other folks.
Right. So it's multiple servers across the internet, which means that Dennis is on one server, I'm on a different server. The theory is if I send him a message, it gets moved from my server to his server, he sees my response, yada, yada, yada. That's a lot of traffic. A
huge oversimplification.
Yeah, it's a huge oversimplification, but that's basically what happens. It's like if I send a message from my BBS to Dave's BBS, goes to the phone company.
But the house rules about the server might be different for me than they are for you.
So my server may say it's perfectly okay to post cat pictures.
Yes.
Dennis's may say we don't want cat pictures.
Sorry.
No cat pictures.
Yeah, we're not
into that.
So
if I send him one, he never sees it. I don't know that unless I'm also on his server and read
I don't know
terms.
If you get a bounce back message or
yeah
not.
I don't know.
Sorry, this is against our terms. No dice.
However, because it is a distributed system, they have weathered the uptick in people very, very well.
Right. Well, you might remember in 2007, 2006, 2008, that era, that Twitter was experiencing some growing pains, and they'd have that fail whale icon that would show up on their. Let's see. It was on their webpage, and they'd have all the little Twitter birds trying to pull it up into the air.
Yep.
So the servers would go down. They weren't scaling quite as well.
Right. And Mastodon has a better handle on that because it's multiple servers.
Right.
Counter Social is one big server on Cloudflare.
Okay.
And when this whole nonsense with Twitter started, about 100 million people, and that's not an exaggeration, moved over to Counter Social in one day. Guess
amazing.
What happened?
Thud.
Yeah, thud. So they're still having growing pains, but they're up and they're running and they're going very, very well.
Well, I think it's a problem they welcome. Granted, they've got
to
make some adjustments. Yeah, it's a good problem to have versus, you know, like Twitter, that everybody's bailing ship.
Right.
And that now they can take advantage of all the folks that are bailing on Twitter, go out there and aggressively, you know, market that this is going
to
be
a
much safer and user-friendly atmosphere compared to Twitter.
Yeah, they just roll out the welcome mat and people just keep walking in.
Mm-hmm. The problem is that the guy who started Counter Social, who is named, calls himself Jester on the site, is one guy. And this is his job. But right now, I mean, he's, you know, paying like 400 times more than he originally started paying.
Right.
So he needs people to actually be. I joined. I'm a member. $60 a year. It's not.
Okay.
It's
like a little over a buck a week.
Yeah. It's not a lot of money. It's $4.99 a month.
Okay.
That's one overpriced coffee.
Yeah.
Extremely overpriced coffee, by the way. It's Saturday. You should be at the public market having the inexpensive but incredibly delicious coffee at the Flower City Coffee.
I mean, you go to most restaurants now, and just a simple cup of coffee is over $3.
Amazing.
It's like, wait a minute.
Huh? Yep. Large at the public market is still $1.75 at our stand. So, yeah. Anyway, the point here is, there are alternatives to Twitter. The real problem is that Twitter is entrenched. You know, we were talking about this off air. You can, you know, people in Ukraine are sending out messages on Twitter.
Sure.
People, you know, I'm safe from the hurricane, or you know, I'm safe from the earthquake or whatever it all is. And so there's a great deal of real valuable information, not just here's a picture of my cat or this is what I had for breakfast. There's real valuable information currently being disseminated on Twitter that is getting lost in the horse manure that's going on right now.
Right.
And that's a problem. So, you know, right now there are a lot of journalists on Twitter following other journalists and people in Ukraine, and, you know, places like that where there's newsworthy issues going on. And they're finding it difficult to continue to follow those people there. So, you know, the question becomes, do you go to Mastodon or do you go to Counter Social? Which one would be better for what, for who, for where, and blah, blah, blah. And right now it's all in flux. I guess, you know, you pay your money, you take your chance, you roll the dice. That's how it works. So, anyway, I'm on both. I'm Nick Francesco on, Mastodon, and I'm shockingly Nick Francesco on Counter Social.
What?
Unbelievable. And so I'm on both of those right now. And,
okay.
Like I said, so far, I actually like Counter Social better. It's a horse race at this point, but so far, Counter Social is a nose by a head.
Okay, I found
is a head by a nose, or is a nose by a head? A nose on a head. Who knows about the head? Okay,
so
stuffy.
It turns out that the app that I was looking at was called AdGuard, and it looks like that is a ad blocker that runs on your desktop. It's not something that runs like a pie hole. So I'm going to try and research some more and understand more about how that works. But interesting. I'm going to see. It sounds like they're very similar, but one runs for your whole network
right.
at the point of entry, and one runs or point right. of exit, you could say.
Right.
And the other one runs on the
so
endpoint itself.
What Pi-hole does is it's a product that it obviously runs on a Raspberry Pi, and it becomes a complete.
It's a bouncer.
Domain name service.
Yeah.
And what it does is normally when you go to somewhere like soundbites.org, the internet doesn't understand names. It understands numbers. So what happens is your computer, your browser says, I don't know this soundbites.org, but I know there's a name server out there. And so it goes to the name server and says, hey, where do I find soundbites.org?
Right. And you get the address.
Well, I am way oversimplifying.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, enough servers respond that it says, oh, soundbites.org is at 50, not something, whatever numbers. And it says, okay, then it can go to that site and get your data. And that's why sometimes it's super quick and sometimes it's a little slow, depending on how the internet is going. But what happens is that goes through DNS or domain name services, translates the domain name, soundbites.org, to the number that the internet actually understands.
Sort of like the old Dewey Decimal card system at the library.
Yeah, similar. Or a phone book when you wanted to look up Nick Francesco and you want to see what his street address is.
Yeah,
what his phone number is.
Yeah,
sure.
Get the phone book or that, and you'd look up, say, the Fs.
Right.
And then you burrow on down, and that's basically what the servers are doing.
Right. And the what Pi-hole does is replace all that with its own DNS server. Now, because all of your traffic is going through Pi-hole,
mm-hmm.
you can set all kinds of rules that say, as stuff goes through, look at it.
Right.
And if it's got this or that or something, strip it out.
Restrictions.
Or
right.
block it from going to, for example, analytics.apple.com.
And people have built lists for advertising servers and other companies that supply advertising or that handle analytics or tracking, and they have published those and made them available for your pie hole to subscribe to.
Right.
And what that means is that your pie hole constantly has an updated list that it can use to filter the traffic that goes out of your home and out to the rest of the world so that it can restrict the stuff that comes in or that comes back. And the end result is, while you're browsing, you should see fewer advertisements on the web pages you visit, and more of your information should be not leaving your home.
Right.
And you should really be getting more more of the stuff you really care about and less of the stuff you don't. And if you're on a metered internet plan where you've got a cap that is a certain number of gigs per month, I don't know how common that is anymore, but this is one way you can actually reduce your data footprint of how much stuff is coming into your home or into your computer.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Rochester, New York. What's up, Walter? Walter?
I have a very simple question. Can Google go ahead and disable or eliminate an app that you've downloaded from the Play Store onto your Google Chromebook tablet?
Yes.
Technically, yes, but tell us more about what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay. I went from the Play Store. I downloaded an ad blocking app, and I use it for very specific places, such as my bookmark manager. Google has come along and said, "Oh, we've changed our policies. So now you need to pay $1.50 a month to continue to use this ad blocking app." I go ahead and when I activate the app, it starts going and the notice comes up saying you must pay. So I keep hitting the screen about 3 to 5 times, disappears, and the app continues to run. So I refuse to pay the $1.50 because I don't have an account with them to pay the money. But I was just wondering, well, will I see this app suddenly no longer work, or will they no longer update it, or what will happen?
Okay, so first you have to verify that it's Google who's telling you this and not the company that makes the app.
It is Google.
Okay.
Yes, I saw on the web that Google has changed its policies because they don't like people blocking ads.
Right.
So therefore, we're going to charge you for this privilege.
Yeah, I have not seen that myself at this point, and I have lots of ad blockers running. But that aside, in general, both Apple and Google have in the past removed apps from people's devices.
Well, at least they've like the casual term for this is that they have a kill switch, right?
They have a kill switch.
They can keep an app from launching.
Right.
And typically they do that if the app has been determined by the company to be causing trouble.
Right.
They wanted the ability to keep it from running on the endpoint device like your phone.
Right. And of course, Apple got into trouble for downloading a whole album to people.
Well,
that they didn't want or what.
Turns out,
I got free music, even if I don't like the music, okay,
so,
never mind. The point is...
Wait, Bono wrote a memoir, and he says, no, it was all my fault.
Yeah. I'm sure Apple told him to say that. But the point, yeah, because Bono controls Apple.
Yeah.
So Apple and Google own your devices. If they want to install or remove an app, they certainly can. They are very, very careful about whether or not they do it and under what circumstances.
Okay. So it's possible that since my refusing to pay the $1.50, it could be bye-bye in just a few days or tomorrow.
Yes, it is certainly a possibility.
Okay. Thank you very much, because I didn't want to spend a lot of time looking through the EULA about this, but okay. Thank you very much.
Might be time to look for a different product.
Well, I've been pretty successful in going through the Firefox web browser, since it does have, I can get uBlock and one other ad blocker. So,
right.
As I said, I use it really on my bookmark manager. I have a very nice one, but it does have ads in there, and it's like, it's annoying just to see that, but I can avoid that.
There you go.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Yep.
All right, have a good one.
Yeah, the problem has been for the longest time that nobody wants to pay for anything on the internet. That's simply true.
Yeah.
And consequently, the easiest way to make things free is the way they do it on broadcast television. Ads.
Or the radio. Yeah.
Or the radio. Ads.
Any media.
And so there have been lots of ads, of course, because it's a digital medium, because it's running on a computer-type device. Somebody else can always write a program that blocks those ads.
That's right.
Which means you don't get the – look.
It's been an arms race. So then they come back and they say, well, if we know more about you, we can – if you're not somebody who drives, we won't show you the ad for the new car model that's coming out.
Right.
We'll show you an ad for something you like. And that's how, you know, you go browse Amazon and for, you know, hammers, and suddenly all the ads you see everywhere else are all for hammers.
Right.
Because they've got the data that says, hey, I'm looking for this. Now, it doesn't help if you just bought the hammer. You went over to your
yeah, that's
store.
The one thing. Once you you look at it and then maybe purchase it, you're still inundated for months over that stupid stuff.
It's how many hammers do you need?
So, right.
So, yeah, so it's kind of been an arms race. It's like, okay, well, I know you don't like ads, but what if the ads were actually useful to you? What if they were telling you? And so they've tailored them and they've tuned them to be more about your interests and about your desires. And you know, they're not showing me ones about taking trips to some far off land if I'm really more of a homebody. And, you know, the more they know about you, the more that they can tailor that. And it also allows them to charge more to the advertisers because now you've got really high probability of, hey, I am in the market for a hammer. Yeah, maybe I should know about this one.
God help you, though, if you click on something by accident.
Oh, yeah.
Or if you're like me and I get calls from my wife and my daughter all the time, you know, because they're either at work or whatever and they really don't want to be taking time from work.
And Mr. So Retired over here gets to pick up the phone.
Mr. Retired.
Quit bragging, man.
Can you look for this or look for that? As far as all of these advertisers concerned, I'm anywhere between a 30-year-old or
more than
older
30.
Woman and a guy, and I look up things for friends, and so I'm, you know, I'm everybody in America at this point.
You are a thespian.
I am a thespian, so I could
put on
be
the
all
mask.
Of those people. But yeah, so you're and so and I admit I'm a hypocrite. I have ads on my website. And I also tell people to use ad blockers.
Sure.
So I don't get any money from my ads. If you love me, turn off your ad blockers for my sites. But don't click on any of the ads.
Or just subscribe, because you'll probably make more from a subscriber than you ever would from anybody coming to your site for decades.
AskNick.com. You can join my newsletter for a mere $25 a year. It goes out every Sunday. I've got 150 plus of them out there now.
Amazing,
And I'm still going strong. So, if you love, I have no sponsors, so you don't get ads in my newsletter.
No sponsors yet.
Yet, I would take a sponsor. I told you I'm a hypocrite.
Dump truck of money stops at your house,
that's exactly
and
right.
You start hearing beep. Beep,
Fill it up.
I will open up the garage doors. Thank you very much. Come to me.
Dump it right here, boys.
Come on down.
It's probably not happening this week.
Yeah.
But we can
dream.
Yeah.
The Powerball didn't work out for you, huh?
Shockingly, I've learned why I don't win the Powerball.
Why is that?
I don't play.
Ah.
So
I've heard that is a prerequisite.
Apparently it is.
I guess there was just one guy, though, won it. That $1 billion?
I thought it was more than
what was it?
Almost $2 billion.
Yeah.
And the place that sells the winning ticket also gets a deal too.
Yeah,
they got a million.
Yeah.
Just for selling the ticket.
Yeah. Nice.
Lucky them.
I'd be happy with just that.
Yeah, exactly. See, I've said this before. I want to win like $100,000.
Okay.
On the day somebody else wins $1 billion.
Okay.
Because in New York State, you have to be... They advertise who you are.
Right.
And I don't want somebody coming after me knowing I got $1 billion, kidnapping my child, my wife. I don't need any of that.
Right.
Whereas, you know, if I'm under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
No, I've got it. Like we said before, you're a thespian. So what you do, you shave off your beard.
First.
You go get yourself a nice big hockey jersey. You know, the big sports fan that you are.
And a beer cap.
The cans of beer on it.
No, man, I don't know where Nick is.
I haven't seen him. No, it's an unfortunate coincidence. I get his mail all the time.
The one thing that I get into is that Cash for Life.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's just $1,000 a week.
Yeah, exactly.
So that stays under the...
If I won that, I would give it to my daughter.
Aw.
I absolutely would. And then I'd have her adopt me.
And then, and then she can just take you to lunch every day.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all good.
That's how that works.
Because it's all about time with loved ones, really.
Exactly. That's all it's about.
$1,000 a week is a small price to pay.
Like you say, though, I've always thought, well, once that one came out, you know, I get it usually every Saturday.
Okay.
And when I go for coffee, and I figure, oh, that'll keep me under the radar. Because like you say, the minute you win, people that win big bucks,
yeah,
they've got so many people coming out of the woodwork at them.
Oh, it sounds great on paper, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, so, what was it? That one gentleman that had won three times.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. And still is broke.
Yeah, he's filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah, yeah, that's tough. Yeah. So what I do, I'm not usually a gambling guy, but what I do is I go over to the casino. And it turns out, if you walk up to the counter, they would really love for you to start playing their games. And in fact, they'll give you a little card with some house money on it.
Yes.
And it's never a lot. I think the last time I did it, I got about $13 worth of money. So I said, all right, we were waiting for a table to open up at the restaurant they had there. We were headed there for dinner anyway. Very great food at this place. And so I said, all right, I'll pop onto the nickel slots and just sit down and, you know, play a couple of lines. Yeah. It was $13. But every time I would win, whether it was a dime or a quarter or 75 or 80 cents, I'd hit the cash out button. Because you can take that money and you can use it for more spins if you want. But then, so I'd hit the cash out. It gives you this little receipt. Sort of looks like, you know, you went to the grocery store, and it's got a little barcode on it. So at the end of this, every time I'd hit, I'd cash it out. I got this giant thick pile of these receipts. They're all for like a nickel, a quarter.
You're right.
Hey,
$4.75. So I get done, and I've got $14.85 that I'm able to take out legally. I can walk away with it. They turned it into cash money, and I walked out of there, you know, and... And I took their house money and turned it into actual money and bought a few gallons of gas.
Nice. I went to on a cruise, and they have that on the cruise.
Yes, international waters, I'm sure.
And I went in and said, all right, I $10.
Okay.
I will spend $10. We can do that. And at the end, I had $10.36.
Aha!
Yes!
Winner!
Yes! I was a winner. Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Exactly.
That's right. Low
budget. I walked away a winner.
That's right.
Hot diggity.
Anytime you come back breaking even or better, that's a win.
Exactly right. So, yeah.
Which usually doesn't happen.
No.
Because everybody thinks, oh, one more pull and I'm going to, you know, going to hit it big.
Right. That's why I only play with the house money.
That's right.
And I used to know this one lady at Kodak. This is decades ago.
Yeah.
And she ran up, I think it was close to 14 credit cards.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah.
People trying do. To, you know, play the, you know, the lotto and that and the horses.
Yeah.
And it's like,
that's tough.
No, they're all against you. Yeah. She literally ran them up, maxed out all these cards.
That's tough. That can be a big problem.
Addiction.
Yeah.
It's literally an addiction.
It can be a mental challenge for a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's serious stuff.
It's very sad, but. Yeah, I thankfully I don't have that problem. So the very, very, very few times that I bother to play any of those games, I have a limit.
Very good.
All right, that music tells us you have wasted an entire hour of your life listening to this nonsense. But do not go away, because there's a whole nother hour of sound bites coming your way. That's right. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Dennis Worster, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, and a whole nother hour of Nick Francesco. We are going to take a slightly longer, probably bio break at this point, but we'll be back with more sound bites. All you have to do is be a little bit patient and come back, because we're right here with the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that with your generous support, we continue to be solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side. Don't go too far.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Oh, I want to read this one instead.
Okay.
Ha-ha.
This has
it's
been...
my list. I can do what I like.
Really?
Oh, no, I want to read this one because it goes along with what we've been saying.
Okay. Here it comes.
Here it comes. Microsoft is now promoting some of its products in the sign-out, fly-out menu that shows up when clicking the user icon in the Windows 11 Start menu. So when you go to log out.
Okay.
Microsoft seems to be promoting the OneDrive file hosting service. And prods users to create or complete their Microsoft accounts.
Okay.
So if you don't have a Microsoft account, you'll see that ad. Those reacting to this on social media have had an adverse reaction to Microsoft's decision
what?
To display promotional messages.
About ads?
About ads in the Start menu. Some say that Windows 11 is getting worse in each and every update it gets, while others added that this is a weird choice, given that half of the Start menu is for recommendations anyway. It doesn't seem like everybody's seeing the ads at this point, which hints at an A-B testing experiment.
I see.
Trying to gauge the success of such a feature on devices running Windows Insider builds or Microsoft pushing ads to a limited set of customers. Redmond has pushed ads within the user interface of Microsoft Office apps or other Windows apps before. In August, the companies displayed ads for Microsoft 365 family subscriptions to Office 2021 customers, with discounts of more than $28 for a three-month family plan subscription. Months earlier in March, Windows Insider started seeing ads for some Microsoft products, including Microsoft Editor and the File Explorer app. File Explorer also got injected with promotional messages in 2016 when Redmond used it to show OneDrive ads. 2 years ago, the Windows 10 WordPad application. Yeah. Shows ads pushing Microsoft's free Office web apps in its menu bar.
Right.
I see it's essentially Clippy. I see you're writing something. Wouldn't you rather do it in Word? Microsoft was also caught advertising its Microsoft Edge web browser in the Windows 10 Start menu when users search for competing browsers.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, some of these advertisement tests have also had unintended consequences. Microsoft accidentally broke the Windows Start menu and taskbar while testing Microsoft Teams ad on Windows Insider build systems.
Mm.
So have you seen these ads yet? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
I would also love to know if any of our listeners have tried a tool from Microsoft that's relatively new called Microsoft Bookings. Microsoft Bookings lets you set up a calendar and then advertise time slots to people. And instead of saying, hey, can you meet on Tuesday? Well, I can only meet on Tuesday if it's after 3 o'clock. And they say, all right, well, how about 3:30? Sorry, somebody beat you to it at that slot. I'm not open again until Friday. Okay, well, how about Friday at 10? No, I can't do 10 o'clock. So instead of doing that back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, Bookings is supposed to give you a link that takes visitors to a website where they can pick the day and then see your available times and schedule one with you. It's the same thing you'd use if you went to like the Apple Store and you need to make a Genius Bar appointment.
Right.
They give you the days and the times.
Right.
Or if you need, I think I even saw it for an oil change place where you go to their website and you pick a spot and or get service done on your car that way. It's become kind of the more common, more modern way to select things. And Microsoft is hoping to jump into this and offer this tool. Again.
Yeah, there are a number of those services.
That's true. Yeah, there's I think there's like BookTime or something similar like that, and there's Calendly, and Microsoft is hoping to jump into this.
If anybody's using any one of those, give us a call. Let us know how you like them and why you use them.
Yeah. Where I work, we've been using Calendly for a few years, especially since COVID. We had a large number of technical requests coming in and the same number of people we've always had. And we needed a way to keep people from kind of stepping on each other's toes and double booking us for time. And the other thing that was interesting is we'd get very impassioned emails, you know, help with 18 exclamation points after it and
yes.
things like that. And then you say, okay, fine, here's my link for when I'm available. And they'd go and book a time that's 2 weeks out.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, wait a minute, I thought this was a huge emergency. Well, apparently not so much. So it helps kind of filter those things out as well. And everybody picks a time that they've chosen, and we meet with them. It keeps us from getting double booked, allows us to book things only during business hours,
Do either of these connect to your calendar, or are you now using yet another calendar?
No, these connect to your work calendar.
So if you use Google or Microsoft or...
Yeah, so where I work, we're a Microsoft shop, so we use Exchange, not Exchange, we use the 365 suite and Microsoft Outlook. The nice thing about Calendly is it will also allow you to connect your personal calendar. So if you've got a doctor's appointment or something else, it will not offer those time slots that you've put on your personal calendar.
Right.
I don't know for sure if Bookings allows that type of thing. I'm still working on this, but I'm interested to know if other people have found these kinds of things helpful in their day-to-day business life.
Yeah, so give us a call on that. In the meantime, we're going to go back to the phone and talk to Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hi, yeah. Good afternoon. So I've got a problem. I connect to the internet through Greenlight, which works just fine for the computer. But I also use that for our TV. We run the TV with a Roku device, and that's what we watch our programs. Mostly I use through YouTube TV is what I use on the television.
I see.
But lately, I've noticed when I'm getting a lot of buffering on the TV, lately, especially if I'm running the computer at the same time, I just touch, you know, go to the internet, it initiates a long buffer on the television so that it pauses and you get that circle, spinning circle while the program is catching up with itself. What is causing this?
Well,
the short answer is contention.
Yeah, but the question is where. So, how fast is your Greenlight connection?
I haven't tested it for quite some time.
Well, I mean, what are you paying for?
Oh, I'm paying $50 a month.
Okay.
500.
So you're getting 500 meg, which is certainly fast enough to do any of the stuff you're talking about.
Right.
So it is. All right. Two things. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, this doesn't only happen when I'm running the computer. Sometimes, even if I'm just, the Roku or the TV, I don't know which it is, we'll go through this buffering even without running the computer.
Right. So I have noticed that particularly older Roku devices have this issue. I've replaced most of mine. I've got three. I've replaced two of them. So, yes, I've replaced most of mine.
Yes. Yes, you have.
Yes, I have.
Mathematically.
Mathematically. The ones I've replaced rarely have this problem. The thing I have noticed is that the one that still does, which is one of the newer ones, if I use an app on my phone called Wi-Fi Analyzer, I see that there's a competing Wi-Fi signal from... next door, I think.
Okay.
Certainly, it's a very strong one.
Right.
So I have moved the channel I use on my Wi-Fi router, and the problem went away.
Let's see. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. So one of the things that you should do is download a Wi-Fi analyzer. The one I use is on my Android phone is called Wi-Fi Analyzer, and it shows me a graph of who's got signals and the strength of those signals. And I noticed that I had the standard, comes out of the box with 14, I think it is.
The default.
Yeah. And so did my neighbor. And the two signals were of a similar strength, and so they were interfering with each other. Duh. So I moved my channel to, you know, I saw a whole bunch of them in my neighborhood, and there was this one clear space. So right. I took it.
Why not?
And now I don't have the problem anymore. Once in a while, I still have the problem, and I'm at the point of assuming it's happening at the other end because it's only happening, that it's happening in the Roku itself because it's not necessarily happening on other devices or whatever. Although I'm rarely running my Roku at the same time my wife is. So.
Now, admittedly, this can be a very difficult problem to diagnose, especially over the phone. The big challenge is when it comes to networks, and especially wireless networks, there are many different places where a small amount of interference could be happening or a small amount of contention, things that people sometimes forget about, like doing their online backups if their computer is pushing data outside of their house fairly heftily. That can cause trouble as well. Or if there's somebody else who's on your Wi-Fi signal who's also streaming at the same time. In general, I like to tell – it also depends on, you know, how recent is your router that's generating the Wi-Fi.
And also what else is going on in the house. For example, a friend of mine, every once in a while it would drop out. Turns out it was when his significant other was using the microwave.
Yep. We've had that at our house.
Yep. So, you know, there's a million things that could cause this.
But in terms of getting help on this, I mean, there's like four agencies that I would consider. One is YouTube TV. The second would be Roku. The third would be my internet provider, that is Greenlight. And maybe, maybe even the router itself.
Right.
Who would I be calling first about this?
Well, the first thing I would do is get that Wi-Fi analyzer app.
Sure.
Yeah, start with that.
And determine whether or not the problem is a neighbor.
Right.
The second thing I would do is go to your computer and go open a web browser and go to fast.com. I believe that's run by Netflix.
I think so.
And what it does is it tries to do a speed test, and it says how quickly can your computer pull information through Greenlight, through your router, across the Wi-Fi, and into your computer. And you should be looking for a number that is similar to what you're paying for at Greenlight.
Right.
Okay.
And if that's low, if that number is low, then what you want to do is detach your router and plug your computer right into the Greenlight ONT modem. And try that again. And that will tell you if it's faster than the problem is your router.
Okay. So the way I have it connected right now is I've got the TV connected directly to the router.
Okay.
Right.
With a cable?
With a cable.
Okay. Great.
And the computer goes through Wi-Fi to get its connection.
Okay.
Well, but still, it depends on...
Does the Roku have a speed test capability in the settings? I thought that it did.
It might.
I would also check that and see what kind of...
Okay.
Let me Google for that while we're here.
But you're still... The router is still in the middle of all this.
Right. It's a fairly new router, too, so I don't think that...
Well, but it depends on how fast that router can go. So, for example, you may be getting 500 megabits from Greenlight... But your router is only rated for 300.
Okay.
Then you're only going to get 300.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, it's the weakest link thing.
I went over to Roku's website, and they said if you press the home button on your Roku remote and then goes to settings, and then network, and then check connection, it will...
It gives you the IP address, and then whether you've got a good connection or poor connection, excellent connection.
It gives you some type of rating.
Yeah.
But I don't think it does the raw speed.
Internet download speed, it'll give you
good,
poor, good, excellent, and then it will give you a number next to it.
Nice.
So that's worth trying.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Still, first thing I would do is particularly, and I had to do this at home, when you're having the problem, fire up that Wi-Fi analyzer.
Okay.
Because apparently whoever was doing it turned off their Wi-Fi during the day when they weren't home.
Maybe.
That's happened for, I'm saying that's what happened to me.
Oh.
Because I would not see it most of the day, and then all of a sudden, like at 7 o'clock, it would be on.
Strange.
Yeah. Whatever, it's their life. Yeah. Let them live it.
Okay.
I've seen something similar. During the day, for the most part, this doesn't happen. It's usually toward 5 o'clock to 10 o'clock at night is when the problem occurs.
Right. The other situation is they may have it on, but if nobody's home, it's not interfering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we've come a long way. You know, in the old days, you could turn your TV on, just turn it on, and there it was.
Yes, yeah. And as long as the airplanes didn't fly overhead and give you static, or as long as, you know, where I lived as a kid, you know, if your mom didn't turn on the vacuum.
Yeah, right.
You could still hear the show and without static.
Okay. All right.
Well, thanks so much for calling.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Nick, do those folks walk around with tinfoil hats on?
Some of them do, yeah. But yeah, I would, for all of you, if you're having issues with your Wi-Fi, start with a Wi-Fi analyzer. That's probably the quickest way to discover if there's massive interference.
It's free for the analyzer program.
And what I've now discovered is that, because I just fired up the other day for the heck of it, just to see who else is in my space. The old default thing now has four or five SSIDs on it. So they're all interfering with each other. Good for them. My area, I shouldn't say this out loud in case any of them are listening.
Yeah.
My area is clear. So I'm still pretty happy with my area. But I get that. But yes, sometimes the Roku... my Roku. The other thing is, my wife's TV is way off in the end of our house.
Okay.
In the kitchen, which means all the pipes and everything else are in the way. So the signal is not as strong.
There's a lot of Wi-Fi shadows, we call them.
There's a lot of Wi-Fi shadows, exactly. So, and of course, that is the room with the microwave.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of other things that, you know, you run the vacuum and everything else. As long as you have devices that are not clean, as we say, you're going to have interference. And so there are times when she just loses connectivity.
Right.
And it's just, it is what it is. And again, sometimes it's clearly Roku. The other day, we could not connect to Roku at all, but my phone was working, her laptop was working on Wi-Fi, all on Wi-Fi.
Right.
So we knew it was Roku. It was either Roku themselves or that device again has, not working well. I'm not going to replace it again right now, although they're not expensive devices. But that's a thing.
Right.
So yeah, we're not. It is.
It's tricky if you don't, because there could be problems at any one point. It could be I need a new firmware update for my Roku. It could be that there's Wi-Fi contention with another device on your local network, or a different Wi-Fi network on the same channel.
Right. As Steve said, kids get home from school, get on the internet.
Yeah. When we were dealing with the cable company and their cable modems, you know, if your local neighborhood had lots of people that were all getting on at once, especially after work or after school, and all doing a lot of traffic, yeah, you would find that your top speed might slow down a bit.
Right.
So, but to get to the point where you're doing an awful lot of buffering anytime you want to see a show, that tells me something bigger is going on generally.
Yeah, exactly.
Or maybe the cable that you're connecting with is only two of the pairs are punched on it and not all the pairs.
Right, right. And again, the first thing I would check is who else in the area is using my Wi-Fi channel.
Right.
And the second thing I would worry about is the router itself.
Yeah.
That's just the way I would do that.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Oh, hi, Nick. I've got two quick questions. On my small laptop, I use Edge. On some of the videos, it goes 1 minute and then it stops. And I go back and redo it again, and then it'll show the whole thing. Is there a special way to stop that?
So it sounds like the page is getting delivered the first minute's worth of video, but then somehow the stream gets interrupted somehow.
Yeah.
Until you refresh.
Yeah, or I just redo it somehow. Have you ever heard of that with Microsoft Edge?
Does it happen on other browsers as well?
No, it's just with the Edge.
Okay.
I have not heard that, but it's certainly...
Does it happen on other websites when you use Edge?
No, it's just this one of those websites that has one video stacked like a ladder. It's just videos, and it does that.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard of that or not. And
well, there are a lot of those places that have only video shorts. They are about a minute long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you're saying that if you refresh it, mm-hmm. you see more of that same video for longer.
Yeah, or I'll start it again after the 1 minute mark. There'll be maybe 2 minutes of video. They're only short ones, like 3 minutes or whatever.
Hmm.
I'll check around. I didn't know.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've not seen anything like that.
On the security tangle, is that, I know it's for, does that speed up your computer or is that more for security?
It's only for security.
And cleaning up.
Right. It could speed up your computer a little bit when you get rid of a bunch of stuff that you don't need anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not specifically designed to make your computer faster. It is specifically designed to keep your computer secure.
It's going to put it back to the speed that it was once it came out of the box when you first purchased it. Because over time, spyware, malware, and all that can slow it down or bog it down from the registry overloading it and not uninstalling stuff correctly. So by doing the Tango, you're cleaning things up and putting it back to where it first was when it came out of the box.
The other thing I got to do is empty the cache.
Right.
Usually a good idea.
Right, exactly right.
What do you recommend for that? CCleaner?
We like CCleaner. We like CCleaner.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I will run that. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks for calling, James.
Yeah. Looks like there's one other person who seems to be having that Edge problem.
Interesting.
But that's from years ago. So I don't know. I'm sorry. I will look into
it. But if other people have had the problem, please call in and tell us about it. Especially if you've got a fix. Believe it or not, there are things that we haven't even seen before.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
New things every week. It seems.
That's us.
It's a big world.
New things every week. That's us.
I'm trying to reset.
Okay, we had a question in YouTube. Something about the elephant one.
Yes.
We're talking about alternatives to Twitter, as many people do not like the direction.
The current, trajectory of that platform.
Trend on Twitter. And there are two big alternatives at the moment. One is called Mastodon. That's the elephant one at mastodon.social, I think.
Yes.
And then there's counter.social. We were talking about Dennis. Dennis is on Mastodon. I'm on both. I personally, at this moment, and again, I'm new to both of them, but at this moment, I prefer counter.social to Mastodon. But that may change in the future. I reserve the right to counter to re-cross-examine.
Yep.
We're going to go to the phones. We got about a minute left. We got Dave from Bergen, New York. What's up, Dave?
Hey guys, I have a weird problem. Excuse me, a weird problem. It's not exactly internet related. It's more a TV antenna reception. But I have an antenna up in the roof or the ceiling. I mean,
okay,
in the attic, and I get great reception. Except a few months ago, Channel 10 and Channel 13, like only around maybe 7:30, a certain time of the night, the picture just totally scrambles. You know, it's just all static and weird colors.
Okay.
And I found out those are the only two stations that broadcast in VHF instead of UHF.
Right.
So I don't know if somebody, like my neighbor, is turning some machine on. It's like somebody flips a switch and then it just goes whack. And then, you know, an hour or two later, the picture is perfectly fine.
Right. All right. You can hear the music. Stay on the line. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, Dave from Bergen, New York, and Steve Ray. It's 29 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm still Dennis Worster.
And again, somewhere in the deep beneath the Superstition Mountains is Steve Ray.
Living safely.
Living safely. You can
eating his canned beans.
Exactly. You can see behind him, he's got his...
surviving for one more day.
His survival stuff in the on the wall behind him. And he's gone away now. He doesn't want us to see that.
That's right.
But we are still on the phone with Dave from Bergen, and we're talking about
TV reception out in Bergen from Pinnacle Hill, I imagine.
And this lasts for about an hour, and then it goes away.
Well, I've never actually stayed on long enough to find out if there's a specific time it comes on and goes off, but it seems to be around 7, 8 o'clock, that area. And, you know, if I go back to those two stations later in the evening, the picture's fine again. So I don't know if this you know, sounds like anything you've ever heard of before. It could be, you know, it sounds like something's interfering, somebody's turning on something that's interfering with the VHF signal.
Right.
The other stations, I don't have any problems.
Interesting.
Well, I'm actually kind of surprised that they're still using analog VHS.
Well, no, you can receive digital signals with an analog antenna.
Well, yeah, you can.
And if you, but, you know, electromagnetic spectrum is what it is.
You're
and
right.
If there's something else nearby that's causing enough interference.
I've got a digital antenna for sure.
Well, sure. Okay, then.
I just got a new one like a few weeks ago to replace the other one. And I got a couple more stations than I had before.
Good.
Yeah.
So the typical things that would interrupt this would be electromagnetic fields from things like compressors, electric motors, generally large things like air conditioner compressors or...
Right, if somebody's revving something up in the neighborhood. The other thing is, I know that it used to be, radio stations still do this, but it used to be that people, that stations change their signal...
The
power level and often the directionality.
Oh,
in the evening.
Okay, because of the ionosphere.
Well, that and whatever their license was.
I see.
So, for example, Clear Channel, you know, WHAM Clear Channel, 50,000 watts of Clear Channel power.
Right.
In the day, there's a lot of interference, and at night, many of those other things change their direction so that they're not interfering with that 50,000 watts of clear channel power.
Right, a flamethrower of power they have.
Right. So I don't know if that's – I mean, I honestly – I'm sorry. I don't know.
You know, this is a lot like that Roku question where there's just so many components between your eyes and the TV and then the transmitter that
that's
tricky.
And Steve says reception should get better over winter as the trees lose their leaves.
That's true.
That's true too, but – that wouldn't trees don't blossom at 7 p.m. So I'm not sure. Yeah, again, it's a lot.
The summer. This started, I think, several months ago.
Okay.
Yeah. See, that's what leads me to think that it's something happening in your neighborhood.
Could be transformers.
Yeah.
Could be.
I just have no idea.
If they've got transformers in the area that are getting older, or that they can produce more interference, especially on the older ones.
Does your TV have any type of, what do they call that, channel search or something that will let you, mentioned you're able to pick up more channels now.
Well, yeah, when I got the new, or every few months I just do it too, just to refresh
the
stations.
Does it give you any type of, when you go to tune in a station, does it give you any type of numerical representation of the signal strength that channel is being received with?
You know, some stations I think it does, and maybe others it doesn't. I can't remember specifically.
I wonder if if when it's happening, you could make a note of the signal strength, and then maybe when it's working properly, make a note of the signal strength and see if there's a difference between the two.
But it's just weird that it just happens for a relatively short time because, you know, 10, 11 o'clock at night, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. If it's a regular time every night, it may be when the station switches over its signal pattern, and then there's a certain amount of time where your antenna gets confused and then picks it up again.
Maybe.
Oh, really?
Maybe. I don't know.
Right.
A lot of this is really conjecture at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But if you figure it out, please call us back and tell us because I want to know.
Yeah, we all want to know.
Yeah. Yeah, I should go question my neighbors and see if they turn something on.
That's
well,
right.
Or ask them if they're getting the same issue with their TV.
Yeah, because I know one neighbor's got an antenna, but he's got one way up above the house. Mine's just in the crawl space in the attic.
Right,
right, right. Right. Yeah, let us know.
I'll check the signal.
What a mystery.
When it happens and when it doesn't happen, see if that makes a difference.
All right.
Please.
That sounds great. Thanks, Dave.
Okay. Alrighty. Thanks, guys.
All thanks, right. Dave. Bye-bye. Yeah.
I presume the signal strength out in Bergen is sufficient to normally watch Rochester channels.
Yeah. Yeah, I suspect it would be. Yeah, I got the least expensive, a $10 digital antenna. But I live in the shadow of Pinnacle Hill.
Right.
I get like 40 stations.
Yeah, you have to just look up, right?
Yeah, exactly. I can spit on the antennas on the hill. So, yeah, for me, that was enough. I know people who are farther out need much stronger antennas.
Yeah, yeah, more sensitive antennas, and the directionality becomes much more important.
Right, right. I could hide mine in the basement. I think I'd be fine.
But you, yeah, you'd be okay.
Apparently, I can't type. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. Hiya, Bob. What's up?
Oh, good afternoon. A few other things to consider with the Roku and wireless.
Okay.
I don't know what wireless device or Roku devices you have, but I've got a couple of the Ultra boxes, and they both operate their own wireless networks. I think it's for the remotes.
Oh, interesting.
The TV remote, the Roku remote?
Yeah.
Okay. I remember reading that they were RF, so that you could like use them from under a blanket or something. They didn't have to have line of sight to the box itself. They weren't
right. And coincidentally, looking at it on a Wi-Fi analyzer on my computer, the same channel my wireless remote got.
Now, oftentimes the remote will be a Bluetooth signal rather than a full-on Wi-Fi, but I profess ignorance.
But if it is a Wi-Fi and it is on the standard, whatever it is, channel 14, whatever the number is that.
Actually, one is on channel 44, which pretty much rules out Bluetooth.
Okay, right. So let me make sure I've got this right. You're saying if the Roku device has its Wi-Fi turned on, but yet you are still using the cable, you think that it's
emitting a wireless signal.
It's transmitting enough to cause some type of
interference.
Well, it's never caused me a problem, but the same signal strength as anything else, and it's way too high a signal strength to be coming from outside the house.
Hmm.
Right, right, right. Interesting point. Thank you.
Hmm. Definitely something to consider.
Oh, yeah, the other guy you had, there's no such thing as a digital antenna. That's a marketing term.
Well, yes.
Yeah, I understand. We do understand.
All right, radio frequency is radio frequency.
Right.
Right.
But I had no antenna on this television.
It's encoded, yeah.
Yeah, well, where you are, you can probably get them with your teeth.
Exactly. The lady who owned the house before us, I had known her son, and I helped take care of him when he got leukemia. She called me up one day screaming. I went over to her house. She had a little organ.
Okay.
And when she turned it on, she heard her dead husband's voice.
Oh?
It turned out it was one of the local radio stations. The guy had a voice very similar to his.
Oh, no.
But, you know, you turn on she had not played the organ in forever. She turned it on and, you know, a voice very similar to her Dead husbands came out of it, and she freaked out.
Oh, mm-hmm. Something inside of it was the same resonating frequency as whatever frequency that radio station was.
And it picked up and went through the speakers in the organ.
Oh, my goodness.
And there there it was. It was a little freaky. I cannot deny that.
Yikes.
Well, when we lived over at Eastbrook, you know, the radio towers were right out our front door.
Sure.
And we could pick up our phone and hear XXI very clearly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Over the, and it blanked out
the, everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. All right, Bob. Thanks.
One other thing.
Oh, yeah.
Did he tell you what tuner he's using and his, what he's using for a tuner?
He did not say no.
No, he didn't mention the specific.
Because I'm using a couple of Hoppage, I think it's pronounced, the Windclad tuners.
Yes. Yeah, the Hop Hogs, yeah.
Yep, I know the one.
Yeah, and they do something weird. I'm 5 miles from the transmitters, and under ideal conditions, I'll get maybe 75% signal, 75 to 80 range on most stations.
Okay.
Yeah.
But if I disturb the system, if I have to unhook the wires from anything, rebooting doesn't cause a problem. But if I have to unscrew those coax connections going into the computer where the tuners are, one channel drops to almost, they all drop a little bit. And then if I, one channel is almost unwatchable. But if I go around the house and with two wind quads, I can run 8 programs at one time.
Mm-hmm.
If I put as heavy a load as I can on it, watching 8 different things on 8 different devices, it'll straighten up, fly right, and I'm back to getting strong signals again.
Amazing. Interesting.
Yeah, I can't figure that one out.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know what to tell you, but that's interesting. All right, thanks, Bob.
All right, bye.
Have fun.
Wow.
Yeah,
8 things at once, huh?
I've had, please.
I'm going to need more eyes.
Yeah, really.
I've had, you know, when we've had company over the house.
Right.
We have people with phones, and particularly if it's an overnight guest,
mm-hmm.
Phones and tablets and everything. And we've had, there was one point at which my wife was watching something, streaming something on television, doing something on her Facebook farm thing and talking to her sister on the phone.
Okay.
Through Wi-Fi.
Right.
I had the television on and was doing a bunch of stuff online. My daughter and her friend were on their phones to some friends and on Zoom to other friends. So we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 devices.
Yeah.
All running simultaneously.
Right.
Green light had no problem. Nobody had an issue.
Right.
But
plus your smartwatches and
plus the watches and I got a couple of Raspberry Pis.
Sure.
That were running simultaneously, doing this and that in the background.
Right. And for the most part, your router just does all that as a matter of course.
Didn't care. Fine. Mm-hmm. And green light was fine. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. For the most part, everything seems to work.
We take that for granted until stops working.
No doubt.
That's an issue.
I think that's what I've learned about all the vintage computers that are in my basement. It's like you get to a certain point and it's like parts become hard to find. The cables become hard to find. And then you get it up and running and it's like, okay, now I can type something in and print it out on the dot matrix. And it's kind of cute and fun.
Yeah, right.
But then it gets all taken apart and put it back on the shelf in the basement.
Yep. And that reminds me, I am not at this point accepting laptops from people. As you know, I've said in the past, I take laptops and repurpose them.
Yes.
We sent a bunch to Tanzania and there are refugees who've mm-hmm. got them in town, blah, blah, blah. My destinations have dried up.
Oh.
So I don't need any more sources.
Okay.
At the moment. I got 3 or 4 of them sitting around right now.
Yeah.
And thank you to everybody who donated them. God bless you. I will eventually move them on. Trust me, I don't play with 4 or 5 computers simultaneously.
Anymore.
And well, wait. Not yes, I do, doctor. But they're mine, and they're already up and running.
Right.
So yeah, I've been doing is taking old laptops, mostly putting Chrome OS Flex on them.
Yes, right.
Because that runs on dang near anything.
Yeah, and it's pretty performant, and you can do all the modern web things with it.
Yeah, exactly.
It works out okay.
Exactly, and I've got one AirBook,
MacBook Air,
That no longer will receive updates.
Oh yeah, right.
And
so
I put
Chrome
Linux
Flex
on
it.
Well, I put Linux on that one.
Oh okay, what distro?
I put Xubuntu.
Okay.
It happens to be my personal favorite.
I just put Kali Linux on.
Well, that's a great.
And I had never used it before, but boy, is that bundled with lots of interesting network tools and other interesting network security related things.
Yeah, if you're interested in security, Kali is the one you want. K-A-L-I.
Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah.
Okay.
Kali Linux.
I could do a whole
Kali
I should
is,
take
I believe,
2 weeks off of
death.
Work and just dive into that if I could. But
oh.
There's a lot to learn.
Yeah, I taught it at RIT at one point. There's too much.
Yeah.
There's almost too much.
Right.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask about reception on the phone since you had some interesting calls about that. Every time, which is almost three or four times a week, the Veterans Administration has a Zoom meeting for exercise, so you don't have to go down there. And no matter where I put the phone, I'll always get, once the meeting starts, about 3 or 4 minutes into it, the red internet warning comes up. That you're about to lose your signal, so I move the phone around, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes it'll disappear and have to reboot back in, and by that time, you know, you've missed about 3 or 4 minutes of the meeting.
Sure.
So I called their IT office and said, you know, what's going on? This is the only time this happens. I mean, for example, I've had Zoom meetings with Fidelity with no problems, with the doctor, with the library. It works fine. Same place in the. So he said, it's not us, it's your phone. He said, you have to move closer to a window. I said, well, I'm in the kitchen, and the phone is right by a window.
Yeah,
sometimes
that's
when I move it, it'll help. So, I mean, in the meantime, before every meeting, just to be safe, I clean the cache, clean the history, close the tabs, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know if you guys had a suggestion or not. It's a Samsung.
What phone do you have?
It's a Samsung Galaxy J Crown. I think it's a 9 plus operating system. Works good, and except for the government.
Okay, so how many people are on screen in that Zoom meeting?
Sometimes the thumbnails will change between maybe 10.
Yeah, there's your problem.
Five.
Okay, so here's the way Zoom works. As more people get on, the signal degrades.
Well, yeah, it requires more bandwidth to keep that
and
session
so
running.
Each person gets less and less signal. In addition, however, depending on the device you're using, you may be overloading it. And if that, I don't know that particular model, but if that's a lower end phone model, it simply may not be, it certainly can handle 1, 2, 3 people in a video meeting, but it would have trouble handling 9, 10, 11. I work with a company called Mastermind Lounge, and they do something very similar with video conferencing. And we have found that, while on a computer, you can do an enormous number of video things. When people are on a phone, when you get into the 8, 9, 10 range, some phones just cannot handle it. And there's not much you can really do about that, except have people, you know, I guess the only thing is that whoever's running that meeting can ask people who are not talking right now to turn off their cameras.
Yeah, the weird thing about it, sometimes it'll do it, and sometimes it'll stop, and then the rest of the meeting only lasts about half an hour or 45 minutes, basically, and it'll be fine. But sometimes it'll just bug you, and so I just ignore it and say, okay, the problem is it'll freeze. The audio goes on, but the picture freezes, and you don't know which exercises he's
yep,
doing
yep.
It's, at that it, time.
Yeah, that's
so
what,
I did a speed test, and what I really wanted to ask you guys, what are the basic parameters you should look for in a speed test for an upload or download? Because they're kind of like, oh, they give you the chart, blah, 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 and the graph. But I'm not that familiar with
getting a number, it's hard to know, is that right. A good number or is that a bad number?
When you're talking about video conferencing with more than one person at the other end, the important number is the download. Right? Because those are the signals coming to you.
Right.
If
what do you think? What's the minimum parameter that you should be at least on your phone for, like, to be able to connect and, you know, participate?
It really entirely varies as to the number of people you have on the call. You know, one-on-one, anything will work. But when you get to 8 or 10, I've got a formula somewhere, but not in my head.
You're going to want at least a couple hundred megabits.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I can't give you an exact number. But, yeah, a couple hundred megabits easy and sometimes more. And there's a formula, you know, the number of streams in times the number of streams out and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. So what you're looking at are the number of streams into your phone. And again, a lot of it has to do with the quality of the video card in your phone. I know they don't call it a video card.
The video chipset and what it's capable of handling.
And it may not be able to easily handle that without overheating or dropping some signal. And in addition, how fast the computer chip is inside the phone.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I didn't – usually if they get I'll check the next time. Sometimes I have, you know, at least 10 thumbnails or 8 to 10, and sometimes there's 5. And that's a good point. I didn't see if there's a correlation between the number of thumbnails, for example, and the quality of the signal coming in. That's a good point.
You might want to see if there's a way to turn off the inbound video. I don't know if that's even possible, but you might check and see if there's a setting.
I don't have that. I don't think I do.
And other places will allow the what do they call that? The organizer of the chat to say this is going to be an audio only thing, and oftentimes that requires much less bandwidth and much less processing power for each individual endpoint. So that could be another way to go.
Unfortunately, this is a kind of where you have to see what he's doing to imitate.
Sure.
You know, the level and the what's next, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes you can do it. If it drops it, if the picture freezes, and because it's the same thing he does every day, but so you know what he's doing, and hopefully when the picture comes back, then, you know, usually he's doing something else, like old time these flicker movies that you see.
Right. Well, you need to see the moderator, but you don't necessarily need to see all the other people.
Yeah.
And what Dennis is saying is the moderator can say, everybody can see me, but they can't see each other.
Yes. And that might help.
Turn off screen sharing.
Right. Well, no, that's different. That's turn off everybody else's camera.
Yeah. Yeah. Turn your camera off and mute your mic.
All right. I'll try that. I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Good luck.
Take care.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, we have rolled out that capability on Mastermind Lounge, but I don't know that you can do that on Zoom.
Right. One of the challenges we have during the week gig is at the Eastman School of Music downtown, and during COVID times, we still wanted to keep doing classes, and we wanted to teach people to be as good as they could. And one of the challenges we had was that Zoom, our product of choice, was actually cutting off frequencies. So people couldn't hear the timpani and people couldn't hear the piccolo because it was really tuned for audio. And what they ended up
voice
doing
is, audio.
Yes. And so we ended up collaborating with Zoom and saying, look, we need to expand the gate for these things and allow more frequencies through. And they worked on that with us. But we also learned how much more bandwidth that takes. And for large classes where you've got 20 different students and a professor and everybody's on video, we learned pretty quickly that if there was a way to not require as much video for the entire session of the class, then that would certainly help the performance, especially of people who might be at home with lesser internet or with less powerful computers. That was a way to help allow them to contribute.
Right, right. Video conferencing is a miracle, but like any miracle, it doesn't necessarily work 100%.
It's true.
Every time. All right. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to apologize for geeking out about a video. I've been it's been my life for about a while now, and it's confusing. I want to thank Dave Enright. I really want to thank Dennis Worster, who takes time out from his life.
Happy
Clearly, he was on the way to a wedding.
Yeah.
To come here and join us. I want to thank Steve Ray for, although he's somewhere deep in the Superstition Mountains, has set up this thing for us, and that's great. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. We had a great time this week. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here in the truly great and truly grateful to you. We are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours.